And away we go, Scott Spears along with you here, another day of the Now program, and today we have got a very interesting subject that I think is going to really clear up a lot of things for a lot of people. Now, we all know embattled legendary comedian Bill Cosby has been going through some trying times over the last few years, currently in prison in Pennsylvania. But recently, within the last few days, some documents have come to light that might explain what has been going on and why it has happened. And joining us today, live via telephone, we are very proud and privileged to be joined by Bill Cosby's spokesperson, Andrew Wyatt. It's always a pleasure to welcome him to this program. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mr. Spears. How are you?
Good to speak with you. Doing well. This morning, when I got your email, I had not seen this covered on a lot of news programs, so I wanted to have you on immediately to discuss this. Before we get to actually what the news is, why is this not being covered in mainstream media? It's been on TMZ, but other than that, not a whole lot.
I spoke with The Hollywood Reporter, Associated Press, CNN, all the major news outlets, and they said, no, we're not touching this. They, you know, sent it out over to 500 plus media outlets. Look, we did not break this news. It was a young guy named Nick. He calls himself Nick the Hat. He has YC News, and he also works for the National Enquirer. And according to what I found out, Nick secured these documents through a subpoena through the National Enquirer, these emails from the district attorney's office. And they received them, and he started going through them, and he sent them to TMZ. And TMZ got the emails and put them out. But mainstream media, it just shows, Scott, that they are not interested in putting out the truth and facts. And that's what Mr. Cosby has always said. Mainstream media is behind this corruption, and they do not want to allow the truth and facts, and to show that this was a political agenda, well planned out, to target Mr. Cosby and ruin him on every level, and get him convicted through the judicial system. And those emails prove it. What the district attorney's office is saying, set him up like to show catch a predator, and get the cause in. And we would have him set up with all these women, and we would stab him as if he's getting stabbed with little knives doing the setup.
You know, Andrew, it's fascinating, and I want to get to these emails in just a second, but mainstream media, for a large portion, the majority of Mr. Cosby's career, loved him for the most part. I mean, he was the Pudding Man, he had movies, he number one television series, did many other television series, syndicated shows, kids shows, PBS, videotapes, you name it, honorary degrees, doctorates. Why did they turn on him?
Well, it was easy. It's easy to turn on someone that is trying to humanize all races, all religions, and all genders. And that's what Mr. Cosby was trying to do. And Mr. Cosby was such a vocal voice out here on the political landscape, on the educational landscape. And he was trying to influence this world and was doing a great job in influencing this world to be better and quit making excuses and blaming others for your problems. And that has always been his mantra. And mainstream media disliked that. They felt, as they do in America, they brand you and put the halo over your head. They put the halo over his head of America's dad. But then when they start seeing you being America's dad for generations and generations and generations to come, you have those racist Americans out here like Gloria Allred and her daughter who say, no, we're not going to have that. We don't want our community, our children, our generations to look at this man, this African-American man, as America's dad. And they put the halo on his head so they could tear him down. And that's what they have been committed to do. They have been committed to keep us out of the news when positive things or evidence come our way. Mainstream media will not give an interview. They will not focus on it. They ignore us. But yet, they when something negative comes out on a blog site or a tabloid, I get bombarded with calls.
Mm. Bombarded. Well, you know, Andrew, what I think about, and we've talked about this before, you know, I remember Robert Blake. When Robert Blake was accused of, and totally, you know, different crime here, but Robert Blake was accused of murdering his wife, and he was in prison, and he fired his lawyers and did an interview with Barbara Walters himself. And a lot of people credit that interview, which they certainly put on television, put on Big 2020 at that time with Barbara Walters. I think Robert Blake credited that interview with helping get him freed and an innocent verdict, not guilty verdict, because people got to hear his story. Do you think if Mr. Cosby gave an interview from prison that it could help have people inquired about doing that from mainstream media?
Well, I think it will not help, because with the insurgence and the popularity and the strength of social media, they have a way of twisting things. You know, they have a way of taking what you say and limiting it into just sound bites. So the public never get the full scope of your interview. You look at Mr. Cosby's deposition. If you had a copy of the depositions to post up on your website and let people read the actual deposition, he never admitted to drugging women or giving women drugs to rape them or have sex with them. They asked him the question in the deposition, did you give women drugs or sex? He said no. He talked about a culture in the 60s and 70s where people did have quaaludes and they used them to party with, and they were considered disco biscuits. That's what he talked about. But we saw how the media had an entire deposition, and they pulled out excerpts of the deposition when he was asked about drugs, talking about culture in the 60s and 70s, and they made it feel as though he was talking about he was giving women drugs in 2005 and even in, you know, 2010 and 2015. And that's the unfortunate thing with social media today. I tell everybody it's a place where the catfish and the bottom feeders live. It's a place where it was created, social media, to take people away from current events of the day. So an interview today with Mr. Cosby would be chopped up and distorted because of the political corruption that he's been faced with. And they do not want him to get a fair break. They do not want justice for Mr. Cosby. They do not want to show that Bill Cosby was railroaded. And that's what we're dealing with today. So I hear you talk about Robert Blake, but when Robert Blake did that interview, even during the Michael Jackson trial, even during the R. Kelly trial, which was almost, you know, 15-plus years ago, there was no social media. And right now what we're seeing is social media and hashtags and documentaries are determining if the judicial system is going to bring charges against someone or the federal government is going to bring charges against someone. And that's not how our Constitution is set up. That's not due process for anyone.
Mm. Tell us about these emails, who the players are involved, and exactly what they show, in your opinion.
Well, the players are Assistant District Attorney Stu Ryan, who was part of the prosecutor's team in charging Mr. Cosby and pursuing Mr. Cosby in both trials. And they talk about setting Mr. Cosby up. Now, these emails and this setup was talked about also with Rita Furman, who was the district attorney at the time and now is a judge in Montgomery County. How 2 months before Steele, the district attorney, the current district attorney, 2 months before his election, they talk about setting Cosby up. If Steele can win, we can set Mr. Cosby up and still could bring charges against him before the statute of limitations run. And these emails came out. This conversation was taking place between October and November. Mr. Cosby was charged in December of 2015. These emails were written October 2015 and November 2015. They were talking about the election of Steele. They said, look, he has won. Now he could go after this creep, Bill Cosby, and Attorney General Kathleen Kane. And she's in prison now. Steele went after her. So this is a political witch hunt to take down people. And they use their office to go after people that they did not like. And that's what they did with Mr. Cosby. They even call, now they call the former district attorney, Bruce Castor, who gave Mr. Cosby a deal and said, I would not be bringing charges because Andrea Constant, she had inconsistent statements and there was no way I could charge you with anything, so I'm just going to send you to civil court. They called him a fairy. Now, those are words against the LGBT community. It just shows you the type of racial hatred that lives and resides in Montgomery County and the state of Pennsylvania, and that this was a political witch hunt to destroy Bill Cosby and his reputation, to destroy his family, and to destroy his legacy.
Why did this district attorney have such a vendetta against Bill Cosby?
Look, Mr. Cosby is one of the most sought-after and wealthiest entertainers in the world. But also, Mr. Cosby has so much influence to persuade people on the political landscape and so many other platforms. And they saw Mr. Cosby as a threat. Look, Mr. Cosby had a new television show coming out in 2015. And you go back and you put the puzzle together. This is a black man who was trying to buy a major network, NBC. Not only trying to buy NBC, but also was contemplating during the same time purchasing the Cleveland Browns football team. This was a man who was opening up doors and giving enormous amounts of money to colleges and universities across this country, not just historically black colleges and universities, but I'm talking about integrated colleges and universities. This is a man who was just changing the landscape of how we view ourselves in America, not just black people, but white people, all genders, all religions, all races. And they saw him as a threat. They could not let a black man in America be so powerful. And they used this tactic, Gloria Allred. She was the leader. She was the one that created this Ocean 11-style extortion script in November 2014 and said, if Bill Cosby gives me $100 million, I will not parade any women out against him. We said no. District Attorney Steele ran a Willie Horton-style campaign ad. If you elect me, I will go after Bill Cosby and bring him to justice. This was a political scheme that had been concocted starting in 2014. They had copies of the deposition from Dolores Troiani, who was Andrea Constant's attorney. Her notes, they knew what the deposition said, and they had copies. And they used the Associated Press to help get those documents unsealed in the federal court with Judge Rubino. Then the First Appellate Court even ruled that Judge Rubino had no business unsealing those documents, that deposition. But he let the toothpaste out the tube, and you can't put it back in. That deposition should have never been allowed in that trial. Mr. Cosby should have never been brought to a trial in the first place. And those emails prove it. Those emails are the evidence needed to prove that this was a witch hunt to take down Bill Cosby.
As today, Bill Cosby sits in prison. When he got this news, what was his reaction?
He wasn't shocked. He said, "This doesn't shock me at all." He said, "I knew this was happening." He said to me this morning, he said, "If the media is interested in the truth and facts, they won't ignore this scheme led by Kevin Steele to destroy me and my family. That's what he said. And, it, you know, he was elated. He said the prosecutor's behavior is filled with racist hatred, political corruption, and homophobic slurs. And this is the very reason why I should not be sitting here, and the Superior Court, they should not be swayed by political power, political aspirations, old Q scores, and or social media. I should be granted a new trial, and I should be free. And that's why we're calling these emails Emailgate. That's what Mr. Cosby labeled them, Emailgate.
What is the process now? Where do we go from here now that these emails are out?
Look, I think we have an opportunity to prove and show that Mr. Cosby's constitutional rights were violated. You know, our new appellate attorney, Jennifer Bundeen, she feels that this is a gift handed down to us. And Mr. Cosby rights under the Post-Conviction Relief Act has been violated. And we feel that, you know, she feels that this is an opportunity for us to take these materials that's outside of the record of appeal, but they might be relevant to help Mr. Cosby and show that his constitutional rights were violated and get him out of prison and free him and vindicate him.
You know, there are stories in the tabloids, as you mentioned earlier, and some news publications about what Mr. Cosby's life is like in prison and losing weight and so on and so forth. What is the status now being in prison over a year?
Look, this was an unwanted, yes, last week was his unwanted one-year anniversary in prison. But, you know, despite the circumstances, look, Mr. Cosby's not, you know, throwing parties and having a good time. He is in prison. But he has made the most of it. He has made the best of it. And since he's in his place, he has utilized his knowledge, his influence, and his educational background to humanize those inmates. As he said to me, the revolution is in the home, but now my new home is SCI Phoenix Correctional Facility. So this is the new revolution. And I'm on the inside fighting this revolution because guys here who are getting, you know, a second opportunity to be paroled and go back into their communities, he's telling them how to be productive citizens. He's telling them how to remove the DIS from disadvantage and talk about the advantages they have on being better fathers, better community leaders. Not saying that Mr. Cosby is happy for being there because he should not be there. But when you're in a situation where Mr. Cosby has shown all of us, when you're in a bad situation, you're in a bad place, you know, keep up your mental strength, stay focused, stay prayerful, and the truth will eventually come out. And this was a huge victory for us to see the truth, to see that Mr. Cosby, this was a well-orchestrated plan by the district attorney's office. And you know, we're hoping that the FBI will look into this and investigate this office. And the same way they're trying to impeach Donald Trump, they will impeach District Attorney Kevin Steele, Judge O'Neill, and all their other cohorts who played a significant role in this scheme to take down Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby, at this particular point, born in 1937, a man 82 years of age, has some problems with his eyes. Being in prison, what is his physical condition at this point?
Look, Mr. Cosby is totally blind. He suffers from macular degeneration. But other than that, Mr. Cosby is in great health. He's mentally strong. His only need is to have someone aid him to get around because he cannot see. He cannot see anything. He's totally blind, 100% blind. But other than that, you know, he has great health. He has great strength. He is 82 years old, but he's doing very well. But I want to remind people that this is an opportunity to fight this injustice people should stand up. People should put pressure on these superior court judges to do the right thing and grant him a new trial. They would do that.
What should people do who support Bill Cosby at this point, who maybe don't live in the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, look, I think if people send in letters, I think if people to the judges, I think if people send in letters to the FBI to investigate this, I think we need that outpouring, that outcry support from the public, from his supporters, to see that this is bigger than Bill Cosby. You know, this is a formula they have tried, true, and tested. And if they can do this to Bill Cosby with no evidence, no proof, a woman named Andrea Constant, who made up an allegation, they did not bring criminal charges against him. He was given a deal. He settled out for $3.8 million, never to be for charges to be brought against him. And this district attorney, along with political leaders in Montgomery County and the state of Pennsylvania, made it possible for them to pursue charges against Mr. Cosby, and that was unconstitutional.
For a man who spent more than a half century entertaining people and was still doing it right up until the conviction, is it hard for him not to be performing at this point?
Well, not really, because he's performing on the inside of SCI Phoenix. As he said to me, he said, I've always read the Bible to study human behavior. And he said, since I can't read anymore, I'm getting to experience human behavior, you know, up close and personal. He said, the guys that I was trying to reach, Andrew, on the outside, they're right here. They said, the media said, mainstream media said, when he did the speech for the 50th anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education at Howard University, the Washington Post labeled it the pound cake speech. That was a subliminal message to black folks, because they associated pound cake with black folks. But it should have never been labeled a pound cake speech. But he said that they stated that I was airing black people dirty laundry. He said, well, you know what? We all have dirty laundry in here together, and we're slowly cleaning it. And we're hanging it out on the clothesline so that everybody can see, you know, what it looks like, and see the truth and the facts of what's taking place here in this country.
Do you think that one of the issues with the Bill Cosby case, different than any other case, was this is a man who did not even use profanity in his stand-up routines? And he was thought of as America's father, and his television shows were so clean. So when these things, extramarital affairs, which that's not a crime, but when those started to leak in, and relationships with women for other purposes, other than his wife, I guess we'll say, that it stuck a little more to him than it would to somebody else because of that clandestine image?
Well, you know, I feel that, you know, Mr. Cosby addressed these issues many years ago on the Oprah Winfrey Show. I think he went on, he talked about, you know, the problems that marriages have, and he was no different. You know, but that was him and Mrs. Cosby's personal business. Look, every man and every woman out here has their idiosyncrasies and their fallacies, but that doesn't mean that you're a horrible person. Look, that was the culture of the entertainment industry and still is the culture today. Show me what successful white guy from George Clooney, Tom Cruise, are having been in multiple relationships, and we've seen and heard about multiple affairs. People have not said they don't have a clean image or they're a horrible person. We see these same people at parties, but it just shows that if you're a wealthy black man in America, you own the rights to your works, your life, and you're using those things to help other people's lives become better, you are a target. So this was not about an affair. This was a witch hunt. This was a lynching. This was no different than Central Park 5. This was no different than when you have Emmett Till and Carol Dunham, a white lady who's now 83 years old, who came out almost 2 years ago and said, I lied, but I feel like I need to tell the truth because I'm up in age and I want to go to heaven. You know, these things are real, and the public needs to understand and not negate the fact that racism does exist. You know, I tell everybody, they say, well, history is repeating itself. No, history never went away. History never changed. And we're seeing it now because you have another force driving it, and that's social media. People can throw the rock now and hide their hand when they want to go after you. And that's what the media did. They utilized people to throw the rock and hide their hand. And that's what they're doing today by not doing a story and not highlighting these emails that came out to show that this was a planned, orchestrated scheme to take down Mr. Cosby. And was part of a political scheme to use him as the guy, the target, to propel themselves in Montgomery County. So I think people have to do the research. People have to read the facts. Look, Mr. Cosby is not a stranger to a scandal or some form of corruption. He was on Nixon's enemies list because he refused to perform at the White House. Now, how could a black man be on Nixon's enemies list, being watched by the FBI daily? His shows were being targeted because his audience was predominantly white people. So they were telling people that he was a communist to make sure that his shows were not well attended. He's not new to this type of stuff, but how could a man who was on Nixon's enemies list during the height of the civil rights movement be raping white women? White women had a megaphone then. They had more power than any race of a woman during that era. And you mean to tell me they were afraid to speak? Well, a white woman could accuse a black boy of looking at her or brushing up against her, and he got lynched and killed? There was no such thing as I couldn't speak up, I couldn't talk, not during that era. And because of who Mr. Cosby is and was at that time, he was one of the number one black actors in the country, in the world, and comedian in the world. How could he have done such heinous crimes and terrible acts to people and no one said anything? That's ludicrous, it's ridiculous, and it's not believable.
When this all came back into the light about 5 or 6 years ago with Hannibal Buress, the comedian, what part did he play in this?
Well, we found out that Hannibal Buress was paid by Philadelphia Magazine. There's a guy at Philadelphia Magazine named Bob Huber, a longtime writer for Philadelphia Magazine. He never liked Bill Cosby, hated Bill Cosby. And he had the magazine to set up at Hannibal Buress' comedy show, and they paid Hannibal to do this joke, calling Mr. Cosby was a rapist, because they felt that they had a social media platform to put that message out there to the masses. They had millions of followers on their social media platform. And the first time they did it, the first comedy show he had that first night, it didn't catch on. But later in the night, they told him to do the joke again. And a freelance writer for the magazine recorded the joke. And he flooded it out, and it caught like fire. And they used that opportunity to go after Mr. Cosby, because Bob Huber had been after Mr. Cosby since 2005. And it, yet again, black-on-black crime. It doesn't happen with a gun. They used another black comedian to tear down this comedian in hopes and promises that this comedian, Hannibal Buress, was going to get shows, and he was getting on the Tonight Show. He was booked heavily. No one heard of Hannibal Buress. But now, where is he now? They used him. They used him to go after Mr. Cosby. And Bob Huber went on CNN and said, I urge all my journalist friends, all my media friends in the business, do not let the holidays, the killing of Michael Brown was in the news, do not let Ferguson take Bill Cosby out the news. We must keep him in the news. He said that live on CNN.
When this whole thing started with Hannibal Buress, I believe back 2014, were there any missteps between 2014 and 2018 when the conviction came where this all could have been avoided?
I don't think it could have been avoided. I think it was a well orchestrated scheme. They had put some time and work into it, and they utilized Gloria Allred and her daughter to parade women out in her stable. Look, she represents out of the 60 women that they had to come out, she represents 36 of them. All of the women who testified in the second trial, that we call 404B witnesses, I call them distractors. All five of them stated that Gloria Allred was their publicist. She wrote their scripts for them. She told them what to say. Even during the trial, we had to make it known to the judge that Allred was, and her daughter was giving hand signals to the women on the witness stand, telling them when to cry, when to change up the story. You know, various things they were telling these women. So, yeah, it was nothing that we could have done. People said, well, you know, Mr. Cosby should have gotten out and said something. Okay. Mr. Cosby didn't say anything. He vehemently denied all of these allegations through the voices of his attorneys, and he was still sued for defamation. And his attorneys were sued for defamation. Just by saying my client, you know, is innocent of these allegations. There was no mechanism, no formula that could have stopped this, because the media was the driving force. They had too much money invested in it. NBC had money invested into the women. Look, NBC were flying. They were flying the women in. They had actual handlers for the women at the trial, treating them like celebrities, giving them envelopes with money.
The biggest problem people have always had with this case, and to this day, it's what I hear whenever this comes up, is the amount of the women. Over 60 women, that over three decades, over 60 women. I think for most people, had it just been Andrea Constantine, I think they would have looked at that differently. But it's this number, it's this volume of women that has always been a problem with people, for people.
You know, the sheer volume of women coming out doesn't mean that you're guilty of something. They just knew how to parade the numbers out, because people, when they paraded 10 out, people said, I don't believe it. Then they went up to 20, they said, I don't believe it. Then they went up to 30. But if you just go through every woman's account, probably only 10 to 15 of them are saying that Mr. Cosby raped and drugged them. The rest are saying that he brushed up against my breast. He touched my butt. You gotta go back and read their stories. And what America has said and what they have said is that women don't lie. And that's not true. We know women lie. This case should have never been about anyone but Andrea Constantine. But first and foremost, Mr. Cosby should have never been charged. He was given a deal in 2005. Bruce Castor, the attorney general, the district attorney at the time, said, Ms. Constantine has given inconsistent statements to five law enforcement agencies. They never gave a warrant to Mr. Cosby at that time. He told them and gave them permission to come search his house. They did not. Even the detectives, they went and met with him at his attorney's office. He showed up. He showed them the Benadryl that he had given her. She said that she couldn't sleep. He gave her a Benadryl. The toxicologist even said at the witness stand, even the forensic toxicologist for the DA, Benadryl does not cause paralysis. does not make you lethargic. Look, Mr. Cosby should have never been, charges should have never been brought up. District Attorney Kevin Steele at the time knew that. Bruce Castor said, the former DA, this woman has not been able to prove anything that something happened to her. She waited a year later. So he sent Mr. Cosby to civil court. Three judges signed off of on his, he had this waive his Fifth Amendment rights, which he did. He sat down and gave a deposition. Three judges signed off on the deposition and sealed it. And he settled out with Ms. Constand for $3.8 million.
People ask, and I think it's a pertinent question, why did he settle with her? What was he paying her the $3.8 million for?
Well, look, at the time, Mr. Cosby, he was listening to his attorneys at the time, and they said, look, she just wants some money. He didn't want to put his family through any other ordeals. And he said, let's just settle out. Like, settlements happen every day. A settlement doesn't mean that you're guilty of something. Someone is settling something right now. We settle disputes. We settle, that's why we have arbitrators. That's why we have mediation. You know, settlements are not uncommon. It does not say that a person is guilty. It just says that a person doesn't want to deal with this and want to move on with their life. That's all Mr. Cosby wanted.
What was the relationship between the two from Mr. Cosby's standpoint?
They were dating. Look, she made over 100 phone calls to him. He returned 40 of the calls. When she was going to his shows, spending time with him at his shows, lying in the bed with him at his shows, she became infuriated when he had a show in Toronto and he was not accepting her calls. Her mother said, we all showed up at his comedy show. I had a gift for him. Thought we was going to get to meet him, and he refused to meet with us. And she said, that made us angry. That made me angry. And all, and then a year later, Andrea Constant says he digital penetrated me, and he gave me a drug.
During this period, is Mrs. Cosby aware of any of this?
Oh yeah, she's aware of everything. Mrs. Cosby is now oblivious to any of these things.
Is this what we would call, and you know, don't let me use the correct terminology here, but is this what we would call nowadays an open marriage?
No, it's not an open marriage. It's just, you know, no marriage is perfect. Every marriage has its flaws. And Mr. and Mrs. Cosby have been married for over 50 plus years. They're happy. They're in love. She loves him. She affectionately calls him Billy. He calls her my dear. They have a loving relationship. And it was nothing open about it. It's just things happen in a marriage. There's no perfect marriage in this world. There's, you know, someone might not have had an affair and affairs, but it could have been other things going on in somebody's marriage. So every marriage out here has problems, but the beauty of their marriage and the way it should work in any relationship or marriage, you work it out behind closed doors, not in the public space. And that's what they did.
What does Mr. Cosby think of her now? Because at one point, obviously, they had a relationship. What's his feeling?
Of who?
Andrea.
Oh, look, he feels that she is is the one of the most toxic people on the face of this earth. He feels that she is a very dishonest person, and she is an extortionist. And she knows what happened. She knows what the relationship was. It was proven at the trial that when he cut her off and she saw him not taking her calls and not being bothered with her anymore, because she wasn't the brightest apple in the bunch, she then felt the pressure. Her parents did not want her back at home. She lost her job at Temple University, and they did not want her back. And she had to go back home with nothing and living with her parents. So she was embarrassed. You know, a former athlete who could not make it, Mr. Cosby got her her a meeting with Dick Ebersol to try and, because she wanted to be a sportscaster for the Olympics. She failed miserably. She just did not have the goods to be successful. And like a lot of people today, when they cannot find ways to make it on their own and on their own merits, sometimes they find ways to hustle people and take advantage of people because they're not happy with themselves. And that's how Mr. Cosby views her.
Being in prison over a year now, we all know that Mrs. Cosby has not been to the prison because Mr. Cosby does not want her to see him in that environment. Is it hard for her not to see her husband in over a year now?
Oh, it's definitely hard for her. But she talks to him 4 times a day. And she fights vigorously to get him out. She's fighting now. She put the best people together. She has a magnificent team that I'm happy to be a part of. We have Attorney Jennifer Bungeen, who's the appellate attorney, myself, and others who are in this fight. And we just hope that these Superior Court judges do the right thing, that they're not persuaded by old Q scores, social media, attacks, political aspirations, and they grant him a new trial. Because if they grant him a new trial, what they're saying is that the 404B witnesses should not have ever been allowed to testify. Because in black and white, it specifically states in that appeal that they have to have similar interests with the one accusing. This case was about Andrea Constant. These women, allegations came from about 20-plus years ago. No similar or like interests. The deposition should have never been allowed. Juror number 11, a white male, said before the trial started, let's just find him guilty and not waste our time. Juror number 1, who became the foreperson, was the neighbor of the court reporter. Judge O'Neill's wife, Di O'Neill, a sexual assault professor at University of Penn. She was funding the rape abuse organization that was protesting outside of Cosby's trial. She worked with them to help get his honorary degrees rescinded, and Judge O'Neill should have recused himself. Judge O'Neill was having an affair with Bruce Castor's ADA, the district attorney who gave Mr. Cosby the deal. He refused to let Castor testify at our trial because Castor ratted him out in 1999 about the affair. He lost the election against Castor for district attorney of Montgomery County. So he held that grudge against Castor and would not let him be a witness to come on the witness stand and talk about the deal and why Mr. Cosby was given a deal and why a district attorney in Montgomery County can give a deal to anyone, that they feel that charges are not illuminated to bring to court. So they strike deals. Judge Stephen T. O'Neill would not let him testify.
Andrew, it's an interesting question because so many people who were longtime associates of Bill Cosby, who worked for Bill Cosby, who were on the payroll, did leave him while this thing was going on and refused to talk about him now. What has kept you there? What got you involved?
Look, I've been working with Mr. Cosby for a little bit over 10 years now, and I always say that when we started working together, I was 37, he was 73, I was born in 73, and the late actor comedian Dick Gregory said, Andrew, the numbers don't lie. Look, I know this man. I believe in him. I know what type of person he is. When the allegations started to come out in 2014, I remember calling Mr. Cosby, and I said, look, you know, hey, I have my own public relations crisis management firm. I do very well for myself. I just need to know the truth. And, you know, if you tell me something happened, then I'll just walk away and never mention it again. He said, Andrew, let me say one thing to you. I would not dare take you through the valley of shame. And that's all I needed to hear. And when you read the evidence, and I've been engulfed in this from the inception, and I believe in his innocence. I know he's innocent. I know what these women have done. I read all of their allegations, and all fabricated allegations that they made. Look, I've seen the evidence. I read the deposition. I was at both trials. I was at all the hearings. If you heard the things that media would not report, if they had reported the truth and facts of what those women were saying on the witness stand, like Janice Dickinson, hey, yeah, I put in my book that Bill Cosby blew me off, would not have sex with me in Lake Tahoe. I went to bed. I took two Quaaludes, drunk some wine, and went to bed. Then she gets on the witness stand. They said, did you say those things in the book? Yes, I lied in the book to get money. It's called poetic licensing. You had one of the 404B witnesses, Janice Baker Kearney. She's a heroin addict, a druggie, LSD. She stays on the witness stand. Oh, my girlfriend and I, we always look for big black guys. That's who we like to sleep with, the big black guy. Heidi Thomas sat on the witness stand and said, Mr. Cosby flew me out to Reno. He raped me, drugged me, forced me to have oral sex. I woke up in the morning taking pictures in shorts and a robe in Reno, Nevada. Now, we looked at the Farmer's Almanac for Reno, Nevada during that time, went back and looked at the weather. It was 39 degrees. Then she turned around and get on the plane because she said, I want to confront him what he did to me. She gets on the plane, flies to St. Louis, wears matching outfits with Mr. Cosby, and she is showing pictures of herself at the dinner table and hugged up with him after she said he raped her. People must examine the evidence. Look at the facts. Read, people. Read.
And we hope they do, and we hope they read these new emails and take away with take away from them what they shall. The emails are on TMZ.com, and we will link that page, and we will also any information Andrew gives us, we will put out there as it is so people can go to our webpage and look at those, because it's important for people to make their own judgments. That's what this country's all about, and see what's going on. And if their opinion stays the same, then it does. And if it changes, then that can happen too. But Andrew, as I always say, I always appreciate you coming on. I hope one day that Mr. Cosby will come on, because he won't be edited. It will be live, and it will be just his chance to talk about everything that's happened over the last 5 years.
Well, Scott, Mr. Cosby and I talk about your show regularly, and if he was out today, he, as he stated with me, I would call into Scott's show and have a conversation. And, you know, we just want people to see what's out there, the information. If you don't have those emails, Scott, I thought I sent them to you. I would love for you to review them and put them on your site. Also, there's a link to an article I'm going to send you done by Black Press USA. They give a detailed account of what the email says. It's a great article for your listeners to read. And I will send those to you. But as always, thank you. And if Mr. Cosby is willing to have a conversation with you, even if it's a brief conversation, I will see him again this upcoming weekend. I'm his only visitor. And it will be my, I think, 38th or 39th visit. I got to go back and look because I see him so much. I will let him know I spoke to you. And if he wants to possibly call, and, you know, he only has a short amount of time when he calls into people to have a conversation with Mrs. Cosby. If he wants to call you and say something briefly on your show, I think he will. And I'll ask him, and I can't guarantee, but I will ask him.
I appreciate that, and let him know, as I say, it will be unedited, it will run as it runs, and it will air more than once. We will not tuck it away, and we will not chop it up.
Well, I appreciate that, and you have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful Columbus Day coming up.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir.
Andrew Wyatt, the spokesperson for Bill Cosby. Information, and no matter what you feel about the situation with Bill Cosby, information is the point here. And if you read the information and you take away the same opinion, that's okay. But if you read it and change your opinion, that's important as well. Accusations are accusations, and everybody deserves their day to be heard. Interesting stuff. This is Scott Spears for this program, Heading for the Dugout.
You know, derived from Plymouth, Massachusetts, of course, and the Mayflower and whatever. Yeah, the old